Hello, everybody. We're ready to start here. And this is a upgrading Revlon to SharePoint and Project Server 2013 session. I'm not sure if you guys have been to any other technical sessions, which seem to be pretty kind of hard on doing the upgrade. We actually have had a pretty decent experience so far with upgrade of Project and SharePoint Server 2013. Goals for the sessions are basically to take you to throughout the entire journey of upgrades from Project 2003 to Project 2013. We've learned some valuable lessons along the way, which we wanted to share, and we think it's kind of useful to share those things. So it was kind of, we're going to go through a couple of different projects, different constraints we had at Revlon, and different decisions we had to go through as we went through this journey. If you own SharePoint or projects and have questions, please make it interactive. If you're basically just starting with it, ask us any questions throughout the sessions or after the session. I think we've done it a couple of times already, so we might have a lot of answers for you. So we're going to start off who we are, myself and Priyam. What is Revlon? What do we do? What type of problems are we running into? How we use Project and SharePoint? And then we're basically going to go through those projects. And we're going to focus on business benefits, business engagement, who uses those applications, how we support this, and any type of risks that we have to associate and learn from those projects. Then we're going to have any questions and answers. So who we are. This is actually our data center in Oxford, North Carolina.
It's a pimped up data center.
It's a pimped up data center. Our boss is a geek. So he wasn't happy with the fact that he just has we had a huge hallway, basically the size of two rooms like this. And we dumped all the servers, and we basically have a maybe smaller stage than this, just a back wall full of, you know, new servers. And it kind of looked empty, so he added a bunch of blinking lights to make it cool for the support team. So that's who we are. We are geeks. We're not necessarily oriented as business people, but that's who we are. Peter Prusak, or Piotr Prusak, if you can speak Polish. I'm a geek, like I said, plus I'm a foodie. I'm a VP of Applications Development at Revlon. This summer, I spent a night at a haunted castle, and it totally freaked out my kids. They couldn't sleep all night. In the past, I worked with a bunch of Microsoft partners starting in, you know, I don't know, I guess 20th century, 1990s, I would say. Then I moved on to work with Microsoft partners. I worked on collaboration, BI, custom development around New York City and New Jersey. And the highlight of my marriage was that for our anniversary, we went to this really cool restaurant slash cocktail place, the Aviary in Chicago, and they don't serve food, they only serve cocktails. And you guys can see this is one of those fancy things. There's a glass that they basically have, and they fill it with smoke, then they put alcohol in it. It's amazing. Anybody has a chance, go to the Aviary.
Pritam Dahake, I am the Director of Application Design and Architecture at Revlon. Just like Pete, I've been working with Peter for over like 10, 12 years now. So we used to work for a Microsoft Gold partner. We worked over there, and I've known him ever since. And it's been great working with him. And once he had the opportunity at Revlon, he said, why don't you come and join me at Revlon? And I said, sure, why not? Let's try that out too. So before that, I've always been a consultant throughout my life, and this is my first gig as a full-time employee of a proper, full-fledged company though. Pretty much a geek. I've been into Microsoft technologies right from the .NET 1.0, or even with the VB, Visual Basic 1.0 days, and doing C++ before that. So I live on the East Coast. Survived Hurricane Sandy. We didn't have power for a few days, but everything worked out fine, at least for the near and dear ones for my family. I know, I mean, a lot of them were unfortunate, but
anybody here from New Jersey area?
Yeah.
Did you guys survive okay?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have power for 10 days. I mean, I was planning on basically doing an actually complete upgrade of Project Server in our dev environment over that span of time, but I went to work, we didn't have power there. I went home, I wanted to attach myself to a backup data center. That didn't work, so we're kind of 2 weeks behind on this project, but we'll catch up. It turns out to be very easy. Our context, so who we are, we introduce ourselves, but we're kind of new to Revlon, so let's go on. Yep, we make lipstick, that's all we really do. We make some other cosmetics, but that's kind of very, very easy business model. However, in the past, somehow and somewhere, somebody made it complicated, and Revlon was basically in this kind of space where every single business team and every single business department had their own IT stuff. So it was a mess. In general, we were focused on just on cosmetics. We have 5,000 employees. If you guys are looking to figure out how big our staff is compared to yours or something like that, we want to provide some accurate numbers for those who are looking at those. Out of those 5,000 employees, about 2,400 are knowledge workers. We have a staff that basically sells. We have staff that manufactures and delivers. So we don't really count them as potential users of SharePoint or Project. We have about 600 Project Server users. The Project Server usage has been growing. We have acquired 600 licenses back in the days when they were fairly cheap, and we held on to them, and it paid us off quite handsomely. As a fun stat, my boss did basically, Dave Giambrone, who joined Revlon a couple of years before we did, he came into a company, like I said, with siloed IT department that basically was able to offer 80% uptime to its users, and now we basically have practically perfect uptime. We're all virtualized. So the story that we want to share with Project is really about some of the things that how we went through from the beginning to the end and how it allowed us to transform primarily the IT organization, but we can also probably share some tidbits and knowledge about any of the other teams. So we transformed our team and we basically reorganized from those silo IT departments to a centralized service delivery. We organized our development, architecture, QA teams, support teams, and infrastructure teams, as well as help desk. So that was the first thing. Second thing, we started measuring what everybody was doing. We standardized on Microsoft tools for the development team. We standardized on Office for project management and collaboration, which was a key. And we started doing this in 2007, realistically, when we joined the company. Yeah. So the first few years when our boss joined, he needed to fix the infrastructure. After the infrastructure was kind of fairly good, we joined in and we started doing a little bit more with the application team. The second story is that we really provide to Revlon is that we have really turned the company around from business users kind of looking at IT as scapegoats throughout most of the projects, looking at what's broken to how can we help you solve your problem. And it's paid dividends to us. We haven't lost any staff. We've been doing pretty good. And we're going to show you how we increased quality and number of projects delivered just on those Microsoft technologies, literally by kind of eliminating some of the fringe stuff that we used to have. It allowed us to go much further. Secondary thing, aside from the tools that we have employed, we also went and implemented some of the Microsoft processes. Some of them are basically kind of like Carnegie Mellon. Some of them are used by Visual Studio team. So more or less, we're kind of level 3 maturity in software development lifecycle and level 3 maturity in project management across the IT. This change, in case anybody wants to know, has not happened very fast. It's taken us some time. I would say achieving level 3 maturity and sticking with it, it's probably 1 to 2 years at least, if anybody wants to take a look at that. So that's basically what we have done. That's how we've turned around the organization. There's nothing special about those numbers except for the fact that compared to having kind of about 40 successful projects. We basically turn around about 200 projects a year right now as an IT organization. And that's us. Our project server is also used by a couple of other teams, and we're going to talk about them in a second, too. Same thing basically happened when we basically look at our support organization. Not only we have basically taken away half of the people from the support organization that were pretty much dedicated to the different departments, we started proactively solving problems in the future. So again, project server, SharePoint allowed us to steer our focus as well as Visual Studio tools, and figure out how to do stuff better, how to do things more proactively. And as you guys can see, we've basically went from an organization that was dedicated to fixing broken stuff most of the time to organization that basically provides a lot of value-added service. And that basically right now, it's I think it's about 7-to-1 ratio. So who uses the services that we provide in IT? SharePoint, we basically have every knowledge worker. That's basically about 2,400 people. If we look at our SharePoint statistics, we have, I would say, about 1,200 users, unique users a week. Project, we basically have every IT users basically uses Project. We use Project extensively for project management, resource management, and timekeeping. We have new product development teams, marketing, engineering, research, and development teams. In most cases, the IT department is the place where we test out ideas and solutions. So as you guys are going to see throughout our progression, before we kind of released any of our tools to any of our real clients, we end up using it ourselves for a couple of months. It's just to make sure that we don't get blamed for anything that's broken. We have very simple rules by which we live by, and you know they've proven fairly successful to us. These are all kind of rules that we have inherited from our boss, Dave Giambruno. So the first one is crawl, walk, run, which basically means we start slow. We learn the technology. We basically learn from partners. We learn from Microsoft. Then we can basically detach ourselves from the partner or Microsoft, try to see if we can do it by ourselves, but still keep them fairly close. And then we basically deliver the technology on our own. Second thing is trust by verify. Trust by verify means that if you're working with somebody as a manager or in a manager-employee relationship or a manager versus a subcontractor relationship, you always have to make sure that somebody delivers the technology you want. So somebody says that they delivered something, check it. It's paid off very quickly. It's very easy to find somebody that tends to slack off. And that really motivates people when you kind of catch them that they have not done something. Couple of other things. If you have to fail, fail fast and fix fast. Our boss is fairly tolerant if something is broken, as long as we can fix it very fast. It allowed us to do upgrades occasionally, on not 100%, but like 99.9% schedule. And you know, if anything's broken, just have a very good explanation about how to do it. Couple of other business and process rules. We can't break the budget. We always have to stick to the budget. So in case we're working with a subcontractor, we run out of budget for the subcontractor, we have to cover the rest of it. We have to finish the project. We try to deal with the risk first. If we have some things that are basically unknown to us, and there's a lot of those, especially stuff you're doing an upgrade project that you've never done, have a phase in which you guys are going to just sit and kind of do a mock upgrade or prototype something. Deal with the risky items first so that you can at least estimate timelines, so that once you start doing stuff, it's not going to blow out 100% of your schedule. Over-communicate to sponsors. We keep everybody updated very regularly, and we don't really mess with finance and or manufacturing. Any questions? All right. Second set of rules is we want to stay as much as we can inside our kind of sweet spot triangle. When do we say that something is a yes is when it fits within our application licensing. I'm sure that anybody that basically deals with any type of licensing, whether it's Microsoft, Oracle, or any other technology, it's always a difficult thing to do. We always make sure that when we start a project, we kind of figure out what will be the impact of your licensing. Second thing is the development and support capabilities, and last one is infrastructure capabilities. So going to project and SharePoint within our context. This is basically how we have progressed at Revlon. In 2004, we basically had a project server 2003 installed. In 2007, we have installed SharePoint 2007, and we had upgraded project server to 2007. In 2010, we started doing an upgrade to project and from project server 2007 to 2010, and in 2011 we started doing the remaining parts of SharePoint. And I think when we kind of look at those transitions, I think the best lessons that we basically have to share is specific to this 2010 upgrade. If anybody here has project or SharePoint 2007, that's probably a little bit scarier for us than doing an upgrade from 2010 to 2013. All right? So at high level, who used Project and SharePoint Server? At the beginning, we basically started with IT and our few business users that were in new product development. In 2007, we started using SharePoint by the IT folks, and we have started deploying Project Server and Project Client to more users. Between 2007 and 2010, we've really seen very much organic growth of SharePoint, very wide adoption of Project Server, and we have started building a lot of applications on SharePoint. We have started doing a lot of custom reporting, both for project as well as for data that was based inside SharePoint. And for the development organization, we have further integrated it with the Team Foundation Server. In 2012, we have a heavy use of Project Server, specific to timekeeping, and we started doing some portfolio management. And right now, we're basically expanding our SharePoint for extranet media management, and we're rolling out BI on SharePoint platform. We're basically converting all of our data marts to SQL Server, and we're using either SQL Server Analysis or SSRS or Excel services as front end.
How are you handling authentication for your
extranet? We basically use forms authentication as well as NTLM authentication. We kind of have it done both ways. No, we're basically just plain old forms authentication implement. We kind of have a couple of different extranet projects going on. We also have one that basically allows our partners to come in through our VPN. We don't know which one is going to be better, which one's going to be worse. What ends up happening is that we have one project that's going to be managed more by IT and another project that's going to be managed more by people that do business with the business partners.
It's also very difficult to basically manage or track your external users, though. So because especially since they work mainly with business than with IT, though. So that's why forms-based authentication works out better. And then for internal users, can access the extranet using your NTLM authentication.
How are you handling password expiration for your extranet? Do you have rules in
place for that? No, we
don't.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, a lot of this stuff kind of goes by, your typical rules. If we basically are going to get somebody in our procurement or finance team and tell us that we have to enforce these because all of a sudden we are storing more critical information, it's very easy to implement. So how did our project platform really grow? Again, with a crawl, walk, run kind of idea, we train our team, train our power users, and as our users learned more stuff, we've taken ownership. At the beginning of those projects, when we started using Project Server, it was all kind of managed by a Microsoft partner. That kind of has almost disappeared by now. The only people that are supporting Project Server are our internal users, but it has taken us about 5 to 6 years to train up our support team, train up our developers to basically so that we are able to manage this. We have focused on key features that would provide us some good business value, but we have not utilized everything that's available in Project Server. For example, in Project Server 2010, we have not focused so much on the project pipeline or specifically on the project portfolio services. We kind of wanted to go either way. Either we had the chance of basically doing a little bit more of a workflow and doing portfolio services at the end of 2012, or we had an opportunity to work with Microsoft and do an upgrade. So because we wanted to work with Nintext, who wouldn't be able to upgrade their solution until the first quarter of 2013, we kind of said, let's go with an upgrade now and focus back on the on portfolio services a little bit later. Trust by verifying, we always seek to find a good sponsor for us. Fit into our architecture. As we have licensed more, we have taught more of our staff, and we have grown our user base. And we have basically heavily invested in Windows, SQL, and SharePoint as well.
Pete, she's got a question over the mic.
We had one guy that was extremely skilled out of New York City, and he was very focused on user needs. And when we had that person, we utilized him very heavily. As soon as that person decided they're going to move to UK, we kind of realized that we have a lack of a dedicated resource that was patient enough to deal with it. And at that point in time, we actually went with external partners. I believe that we went for some customized training with like UMT, as well as somebody that basically offered training on a wider scale.
But with the internal resource, we did have proper formal training sessions for users, though.
Mm-hmm.
And basically did have notes and cheat sheets for them to go through that.
Yeah, and we think that's kind of key to any type of transition or adoption. Each time we kind of do a left field transition and we deploy a new technology, without necessarily providing training, we have so many more complaints than during if we just provide minimal training. Even if we provide minimal training that nobody shows up to, still better than not providing any training. It's just less grief.
Next one.
Mm-hmm. So now basically we're going to switch over to the technical side of this. So Project Platform team, in terms of our infrastructure, when we started with Project 2003, we basically had single physical server. Then we went to a SQL server, kind of a client server model for Project Server and SQL Server with Project 2007. And with Project Server 2010, and going forward with Project Server 2013, it's all virtualized. We actually used VMware and NetApp for our core infrastructure. We license the data center Windows server, so it makes it easy for us to add as many servers as we want. We basically are paying per CPUs and memory. So we have an OS virtualization and disk engineering team that basically is about 5 people. We have a dedicated DBA team that's about 3 people. And these guys have switched over from Oracle to SQL. And they've done it in a span of about 3 years. We have isolated the architecture development and QA teams from the previous silos. So at the beginning, we had zero people in those roles. Right now, we have about 3.5 people that are dedicated. And we additionally use external developers whenever we have budget. For some of the things, such as custom applications, we use developers that are local to our area. We like those developers to, you know, show face and work directly with our business. Occasionally, we step in as analysts, and for things like business intelligence, we work with offshore developers.
Yeah, but the key over here also, is from what Pete was saying, is that we never actually hired new employees, though. Pretty much we trained all our employees to move from Oracle to SQL and from other projects to SharePoint and Office, though.
Projects ever work. We kind of found out fairly early that in order to be successful with project, we wanted to stay as vanilla as possible, as close to vanilla as possible. We've made configuration changes only to Project Server. Starting with 2007, we started making some changes to the SharePoint sites. However, since we already knew how to work with SharePoint, we also knew how to make those SharePoint changes that would be easy to upgrade. The last thing that we basically did with Project Server, we have deployed Team Foundation Server integration, which allowed our developers to basically convert, you know, some tasks between Team Foundation Server and Project, make this timekeeping and task management a little bit easier. Some of the other things that we've done is heavy reporting changes. I understand that this is one of the areas where Microsoft has made huge investments, and we think we encourage everybody to basically do changes to reporting. Literally, all of the reports that we've moved from one version to another, they have been pretty easy to move. Nothing major. I mean, we basically change the data source, maybe make some small modifications. Typically, it's enhancements rather than anything else. Very easy to upgrade. Last thing that we did is we developed our own analysis services database, which, again, basically points to the reporting database that has some additional fields that we didn't want to, you know, break in Project Server. SharePoint is kind of a different story. We kind of see SharePoint as a platform on which we develop application to solve our business problems. So in some cases, we kind of promote this organic growth where, you know, we build some crazy stuff. And then we kind of go back and we kind of try to retrofit it into something that makes sense. So a lot of our SharePoint projects have been such that our business users kind of have an idea of what they want to achieve, and they are trying to force us down a specific path, and we kind of do it in the opposite way. We kind of say, how about if we try it in a couple of different ways? And once the business users see those different ways, they're very easily convinced that something can change. Occasionally, it leads to, you know, crazy stuff, but additionally, for us, you know, it avoids analysis paralysis. We don't have to sit with a business user and, you know, get, you know, 15 pages of documentation of what to do. We build something, we do it. If they don't like it 5 days from that point on, we can refactor it. We kind of expect that that's how it's going to work, just because we find that business users are not as familiar with the platform, they're not familiar with the capabilities. For example, they might know that, you know, I used to work with SharePoint and they had document storage, but we don't know how to manage metadata for those documents, or they don't know how to make something relative to a list, or they don't know how to use a workflow, or even build an alert. Some of these things just come out very easily.
Yeah, like typically some of the stuff, like we still have to train some of our business users on what SharePoint is, document libraries and lists and all of that stuff, as to what all it can do. But from an application perspective, there are a few key things that we do a lot. Some of them is like InfoPath forms, workflows. So at Revlon, we use Nintex for our workflow engine on top of SharePoint, though. So I mean, for something like that, we do work hand in hand with the business to get proper requirements on what the workflow, what the key requirement for the form is, or for the workflow is, and try to set it up and make it as configurable as possible so that whenever there's an upgrade, because I've never seen any business user who doesn't come back like in a couple of months' time and start saying, oh, you know what, let's change this or let's change that. And at that point in time, the workflow or the application is always in production, and it's always risky to basically, if you haven't configured the application or architected the application properly, it's always a challenge to make changes at that point in time without losing data, though.
So since we came out of Microsoft partners that have worked with SharePoint, we kind of have a good idea that, you know, if you work with web parts, if you work with, you know, documents or site definitions, these are the things that tend to be a little bit easier to upgrade than, you know, kind of SharePoint designer stuff or doing fancy UI. Most of our sites never basically use any of the fancy UI. Literally, at Revon, we only have a couple of sites where the UI has been changed, and these are marketing sites and our main portal. And, you know, just, you know, to reflect on something, everything else, it's pretty much also the UI stays very true to SharePoint, and we don't care. We basically upgrade, and the UI goes with it, you know, and we have an option. Do you want to keep the old UI, or do you want to upgrade to a new UI and leverage all the new features? That's as easy as it is for us.
Yes, yeah, at the most, we only recommend that you change the logo, though.
Well, no, I mean, for marketing, it's a little bit different story. They want the whole branding part. Some of people ask us, you know, considering that doing this SharePoint upgrade is such a more difficult story than doing project upgrade, why do you do these crazy projects? And we literally look at the ROI for each one of those projects that we do for these teams, whether it's business intelligence, document management, workflow. All of these solutions that we build for them cut down on a lot of their internal costs. We've had some people that we've had some projects where we were able to cut out, about 20 hours of manual labor with literally 3 weeks of effort. And, you know, 20 hours of manual labor each week adds up very fast. So all these projects have just like amazing ROI. Even if we have to upgrade and, you know, do some additional work at the end of it, you know, it's worth it. All right. The last thing that we kind of wanted to mention is company culture. I mean, I'm pretty sure everybody kind of might have the same observations. But if you're new to kind of working with business customers, and if you're considering what to do when I have to do an upgrade or what do I have to do when I have to deal with difficult clients, it's all the same. I mean, you know, we've worked in consulting organizations, and it's the same story pretty much everywhere you go. All in all, people love when you take away their pain. And what I mean is, if somebody basically puts in 2 hours of work to do some work for me, whether they're going to spend it in requirements or testing, they expect that I'm going to take away some of their pain as a result of it. It has to be worth for them. And if you have that kind of story, they're going to work with you very easily. They love to see demos. I've heard that everybody here at this conference has a demo involving a Bing map, so I guess we're going to use that when we come back home. We're going to use Bing maps everywhere. And if you train people, they don't ask too many questions at the end of the project. How to deal with the difficulties, and those difficulties arise every single time. We always make sure that we have the right sponsor. Literally, somebody comes to me with kind of a project idea that includes I want to automate the work in another department. We always request that somebody else higher up above will be the sponsor for this project, because what ends up happening is you have two departments in fighting. There are always 10 to 15% people that will not tolerate change. If you can avoid them, you know, just, you know, choose a different path across the office. That's probably the best way to do it. There's nothing I can do about that. There's just some people that are going to hate change. Other people can always be convinced that, you know, change, when you have those benefits, you take away their pain, will work. Worst case scenario, you know that you're right and you can't convince somebody, bring an expert. I don't know, bring a partner, bring somebody from Gartner, from Microsoft. Actually, don't bring anybody from Microsoft. because Microsoft obviously will be a biased party, but bring a partner or somebody that's seemingly neutral or somebody like that. That's a pretty good idea. Did you have a question? All right. So going on to our real upgrade project, so done with the background story. So project 2003 to project 2007 was very easy, just better features. We wanted to go from a single server to kind of a client server in case we wanted to do some more growth, which we did. And at the end of the day, we actually ran out of space in our 2007 farm anyways. All of the work was done by an integrator. We didn't really touch anything. We basically managed the integrator. The Revlon project management office and business users were utilized as QA resources. So they kind of had an idea, this is what you want, what we want you to build, and the integrator obviously came and did this, and the upgrade was fairly successful. What happened at the end of the project is that we had a couple of people that fell into this 10-15% range that basically reported a huge number of problems, and it was kind of Microsoft dropped one of the features from the application but replaced it with five other features, and the person was not happy that that feature was gone. So after we basically clarified those projects, problems really went away. As a result, with the kind of lesson learned for us is that there's always going to be some feature that's deprecated. If you're going to do this, I wish that we had known this, or the partner that was working with us kind of let the business users know in advance. That type of forward-looking statement that this feature was deprecated by Microsoft tends to kind of stop the conversation, and the conversation is over, rather than wasting a lot of cycles. As with every single update, we basically move stuff. Some people have shortcuts on their desktop. We had to relink and reconfigure some of the sites, but you know that basically was solved very easily by our help desk. Project 2007 to project 2010 upgrade, and I believe that when we went from project 2003 to 2007, we actually started integrating it with SharePoint before they were kind of separate entities for us. We needed better reporting and wanted to simplify our time tracking. We really needed to upgrade to 64-bit versions of Project and Office for scalability. As I have mentioned, we were basically getting hammered. We have started getting, you know, about 400 users on our project server, and our project server was dying in our 2007 farm. We just had to do this. It was crazy time. We literally were, you know, hoping that nothing would go wrong every single day with our server.
So till 2003 and 2007, we were running on a 32-bit platform, though. But from 2010 on, we basically moved to a 64-bit platform.
Mm-hmm. So servers were not performing well, and we really wanted to achieve the integration with the TFS. So this is the first time that we kind of have started taking on this work for ourselves, which was pretty good. We have developed proper development, QA, and production environments. With load balanced front end servers. We made some additive changes to enterprise field just to accommodate adding new departments. And as I mentioned before, we integrated TFS. We work with an integrator to help with the project update while we had taken upon ourselves to do the content database for SharePoint. Actually, it was The content database upgrade was fairly smooth with the known fact that, you know, some of our links were broken and we had to fix them. We have worked closely with Microsoft on TFS integration. We have always tried to reach out to Microsoft to see if they have some cool programs. There are a couple of reasons why we always reach out to Microsoft. I think our employees kind of appreciate that they have other fellow geeks to talk to. I mean, we're kind of a small team. We have about 25 people in our application development department. So talking to somebody else that bounce some ideas is always a good thing. And you know, occasionally you get out and come to see an event like this or go to Seattle. It's fun. We also had utilized our internal QA team for testing and relied on business users to perform some UAT. at the end of the day, our reporting capabilities came through very well. I think as the biggest benefit for us, we were able to basically fully achieve that level three maturity level. We're able to plan our resources. You know, previously in the past, we had resources that were severely over-allocated. This kind of put a lot of data directly into the hands of users, where specifically resource managers as well as team leads, and we are able to schedule our work much better. Secondary thing that we were able to achieve is we actually went to our finance department and said, you know, it doesn't make any difference whether we do the work or our subcontractors do the work. And they started to treating our work as company capital. So we're kind of a internal consulting company at Revlon. We actually provide value, which is kind of...
labor gets capitalized.
Labor gets capitalized and, you know, our boss is happy. Ooh, lessons learned. That's a nasty looking thing. Well, some things went well, some things didn't go so well. We had a small team of business users that suffered very heavily as project client would basically, they would open project, they would open a couple of projects and they would start doing their work and then their project would die. We worked on it with the team that basically did the upgrade. We looked at it internally. Ultimately, we basically had to go to Microsoft and we had to ask for a specific hotfix. And it basically was our fault. We basically have not tested that particular scenario. That is basically, you know, our huge issue. The other stuff was the minor security and link problems for IT users, which again were basically solved by easy work with help desk. Finally, we basically had to do roll back some of the UI updates as we still had users on IE6. So I think the most important thing that we wanted to share with you guys is we as an IT, we had not documented all of those scenarios that our users were going through. We literally, if you look at your typical project managers, they have worked with one or two or three projects maximum. We have people at in our new product development that work on 15 projects at the same time. They literally have 10 instances of project open, and they basically do massive manipulation of data. Then they open project, check them out, save them. That basically crashed. Had we tested this, we probably would have never gone with that upgrade until the hotfix was available. We were the worst team for a couple of weeks. We literally made the company stop work or basically slow them down very badly. All right, SharePoint. You want to tackle this one?
Sure. So when we started doing SharePoint 2007 to SharePoint 2010 upgrade, so like I was saying, SharePoint 2007 was being run on a 32-bit platform. We knew that we wanted to, for SharePoint 2010, we had to go to a 64-bit platform. So the first thing that we started doing is we had a couple of the senior guys in my team, architects, and myself, and Pete. So what we did is we basically had SharePoint running in our personal VMs. So the way we work at Revlon is pretty much all the senior developers have a pretty powerful workstation in which they can create their own Hyper-Vs and manage them themselves, and they can work over there. For some of the junior developers, we go to our infrastructure team and request our VMs so that they can basically start working or developing in those VMs. Because at the end of the day, for doing any of these development work, you need a server machine, though. You can't do on a workstation. So we got the early bits of SharePoint. We installed it on our Hyper-Vs. We did a couple of mock upgrade scenarios. Mock upgrades in the sense we would take a production database, ask a backup, get a production database backup, put it on our local machines, basically try doing an upgrade, and see basically what was happening though. So that's what we ended up doing. We started analyzing the issues in that process. So some of the facets that we had in SharePoint, we basically had third-party workflows. We had a lot of content to upgrade. We had custom web parts that we had written. We had custom web parts that we had bought from third-party companies that we had to do. And plus, because there was some refactoring involved in that also, though.
So eventually, what we ended up doing because of those issues, we kind of realized that project server upgrade was simple, other than that one snafu with the use case that we didn't deal with. And we really looked at it and said, you know, let's break it up into, let's do a little bit more deeper analysis and break it up into a couple of phases where we will focus on certain types of upgrades that we can do. So one of them obviously was, let's do the workflows, let's do custom applications, let's do content, and then let's do any of the remaining stuff like fancy schmancy UI upgrades. So as we said, you know, lots and lots of work. We worked with our business users, and ultimately it basically took us about a year to do this project. So if anybody's kind of looking at the difference between vanilla project server versus customized SharePoint server, literally it's a difference between, you know, 1 month of work versus almost a year. So again, I mean, we're kind of getting pushed. We started it a long time ago. We knew that our servers were, you know, still working with some of the physical servers. We had a physical database. We had virtual servers. But those virtual servers, even running in a 32-bit environment, we started with IT users, and we had literally, you know, 100 IT users basically working with SharePoint, and all of a sudden we have 1,200 users hitting the same machine. It was not a good scenario. So we wanted to create a good, stable environment. We wanted to leverage new features of SharePoint, and we were getting a lot of project requests from our business users. So how did we break it up? Go ahead.
No, this is interesting, though, because like what we were saying is that we had to reorganize our... We basically, when we moved to 2010, what we ended up doing is that we reorganized our SharePoint farm, though, logically. So we ended up having about like 5 or 6 different web applications. So we had like one web application for our intranet, one application that was hosting any of our custom applications which had Nintex workflows or something. There was one web application that we had, which was only for team sites. There was one web application for my sites. There was another application for Project Server. So, and basically, one of the ways of the good thing for doing that also is that we ended up reorganizing our databases also. So, so we knew basically when we looked at on the database side, we knew exactly which content went was associated with which web application, though. So when we did these, when we started doing the upgrades, it was very easy for us that way.
And again, that kind of allows us to focus on a limited number of IT resources that we have, and especially when we look at the issues that we have to tackle, such as reaching out to a business team and letting them know, we're working with your stuff, you guys have to work with us, and we can really isolate a small group of people. We could basically go to 50 people and say, we're doing this, what do you guys want to see next? We could also focus our training. We could go and take that single guy that we have in the organization, say, can you train these guys even if it's remotely?
Yeah.
And you know, some of those small tangential benefit made us successful, but it basically dragged out the project. It also allowed us to work in a different way with our business teams. For instance, our business teams work in very much different cycles. I'm pretty sure it's kind of similar in your case. Our finance teams are unavailable from the last week of the month to the first 3 or 4 days of the month, and we couldn't work with them. So we would schedule something with, you know, R&D team or marketing team, something like that.
And also, like another thing that is of importance to note over here is that at Revlon, we were on Windows XP and IE6 till pretty much like early this year, though. And with SharePoint 2010, the workflows are not supported on IE6. So it was a big deal for us. Basically, we had to move people onto, we had to do an OS upgrade for the users' machines and upgrade IE also, though. So like I said, when we started reorganizing the databases, so like for example, IT went in first. So we knew that basically all IT machines were upgraded, client machines were upgraded to Windows 7. So we could actually phase out our upgrades this way though. So as soon as like a specific region went was upgraded at an OS level, we could basically upgrade their SharePoint sites only to the newer version. And I think that what we did during the SharePoint 2010 upgrade was like a very good foundation building block for us, because of that, like the SharePoint 2013 upgrade was a breeze though. It wasn't that complicated at all.
Some of the migration facts.
Yeah, so this is what we were saying. So we had like we have different multiple web applications. We have about 550 gig of content data in our SharePoint, about 250 plus site collections, third-party components like Nintex, Chorusworks, Bamboo, and plus homegrown web parts.
I think we're going to go with 8 web applications for 2013.
There you go. And lots of Nintex workflows, InfoPath forms, and then we have jQuery also. We did end up writing jQuery for some of our application.
So there's a couple of different SharePoint migration approaches. I think this one, as you can hear from our pain points, no matter how you basically look at it, there's a way of basically writing specific code and upgrading a single site collection at the time within the collection database. We think it's a little bit easier if you actually break it up into the way that we've done it. Literally, we kind of preemptively design our database so that we can either isolate stuff for security or for upgrade purposes. The strategy is really simple. We basically break it down by department, security, or application type. If you're in any of those buckets, we put you into an existing application where you can live with some of your other similarly minded friends. Or if you're very unique, we can basically put you into your own unique content database.
Yeah, but because of that now, one of the things that you have to remember is that like, from a SharePoint administrator perspective, he just cannot go into the SharePoint UI and start creating site collections though. Because by default, like the site collection gets created in the default content database. So typically, we've trained our SharePoint administrator to basically either use use command line or PowerShell, so that when he creates a site collection, like a new site collection, he creates it in a specific content database.
Yeah, I mean, we don't create that many site collections. I guess you have seen we have 250. It's not a pain point. If we wanted and needed to create lots of site collections, we'd probably create a custom web part to do that. No big bang approach in this kind of strategy. We're just analysis. That's all there is to it. The benefit of basically breaking it up into content database is that, as we're going to show a little bit later on in our kind of sample project that we're doing, that we have listed, literally what you end up doing is you take database from one server, detach it, attach it to another server, click upgrade, and you're done. Obviously, after you're done testing your web parts and every other step. However, those other fixes have to happen no matter what you do. But that basically takes away the pressure from your migration team who has to work in the middle of a night deploying content or deploying something. And, you're taking a 150 gigabyte database or, two or three of those 150 gigabyte databases, and, all of a sudden you find out that, you have to copy it from one server to another, do a lot of other stuff. All of a sudden you end up having a project that basically is 14, 15 hours long. And that's a pretty big outage window. That's the first thing. And the second thing, it's you put a lot of stress on your team, whether it's your subcontractor or you. So second thing that we do is we also built a custom HTTP redirect module. So we still have an old server, SharePoint 2007. People hit the server, we take them to a new server. That's all that thing does.
Yeah, so one of the things that we had done, like in the old server, like when we did the reorg, it wasn't just like a content reorg. The business wanted to reorganize their SharePoint sites also. So that is the reason why we had to, when we wrote the redirect module. So for example, in 2007, when they went to site A, which was one level deep, maybe in SharePoint 2010, like the site was moved is now like two levels deep or three levels deep though. So in order to basically not cause an outage, people have a lot of favorites and shortcuts created. So that's the reason why we wrote this HTTP module, so that the request would come to the old SharePoint server, and the SharePoint server would basically, we had like a mapping of the old site to the new site on the old SharePoint server, and then the old SharePoint server basically redirected the traffic to the correct new server, or the new site.
Yeah, we wrote that module ourselves, but I've seen similar modules available on CloudFlex. Yeah. I mean, we just wanted to have something where we can do a massive server configuration rather than touching individual sites, which was available on CloudFlex. We like the stuff that was on CloudFlex. We just would have to touch too many things at the same time. All right?
And then after that, I guess since everything was virtualized, once we migrated over to the, once everything was migrated to the newer platform, the old VMs got decommissioned.
So journey continues, Office 2013. Why do we need to move to Project 2013? And that's really a question for me and my boss, because my boss is always asking me to do something else, and I always have to tell my boss why I want to do something. We have a huge, we still have a small problem. I wouldn't say huge. We have a small problem with our timesheets. As you guys have seen, we basically have our IT organization going through 200 projects. Each project has a lot of tasks. When people start entering their timesheets and they want to do it through PWA, all of a sudden you end up occasionally hit the screen for the first time and you have 2,000 line Excel spreadsheets and you have to figure out where to put your time. Project 2013 solves a lot of this stuff, makes it a little bit simpler. It basically has kind of dual timesheeting and task darking mode, which we really like. We liked it throughout the pilot, and we're going to leverage it. It's going to take away the pain points for a lot of my developers. We really want to deploy portfolio management. As we basically, we know that portfolio management kind of existed in Project Server 2010. We didn't deploy it. We don't really have super a lot of skills. We probably would want to work with a partner like UMT. To deploy this, but it kind of looks silly to us that, you know, we have a feature that we haven't used in the past. We tend to basically use an upgrade of a server product as an excuse to use one of its features. Last but not least, actually there are two more things. There's obviously BI, you guys have seen it all, and mobile access to data inside project in SharePoint. That's key to us. So in this case, we've been working with Microsoft throughout kind of early betas. So we've broken this project into four iterations. Iteration one, it's basically 4 weeks of work. It's not really 4 weeks of work. It's basically we tend to work on a four-week cycle. We don't work, you know, I don't put in 4 weeks of work. Maybe there's 1.5 weeks of work for me, and then there's a couple of hours for a bunch of other users. First goal, achieve functional upgrade. I basically do this type of stuff on my own VM. I install and configure the software. At this point in time, it was pre-release part of Project and SharePoint Server. And the process is very easy. Backup the production data for Project Server, content databases related to Project Server, restore, attach, consolidate, test it, and file bugs. That's all there is to it. Very smooth process, nothing to it. We just want to make sure that not really looking at SharePoint data, but at least at project that everything works, that I can basically open project client, check in the project, check out the project, do my timesheets. So iteration two, this is where we currently are. We want to do the same thing, but at this point in time, we're doing this against RT embeds. So we have acquired, we basically rebuild an identical farm to what we have currently in our 2010 environment, except we're building against SQL 2012.
Yep.
And we're not using...
We're not using Windows 2012.
We're still using on Windows
2008
R2. And it works for us very well. So again, it's the same process. We back up production aid for project server content databases. And again, it's really the hardest part here is not really doing project stuff. It's actually configuring the SharePoint farm and making sure that all of the services and all of the security works there. That's our biggest learning experience. But once you do it, it kind of, again, you can do it in your sleep. And the team here that we leverage is basically we have engineering that provisions the databases. We have DBAs. We have IT pros such as myself that basically does. Why am I an IT pro? I don't know. I just put myself in an IT pro position for that particular hat-wearing experience. We have a developer that basically starts doing any of the additional bug fixes that we have identified initially. We have some QA people, PM person, and tested with more IT people. Next thing, we have our iteration 3, which is going to take place in December, where we basically want to do a complete functional upgrade against release to manufacturing, release of project server. Same things that we've done before, plus additional tasks. So we're basically going to have our full team QA all of the use cases that we have documented in the past. They basically have to do a regression test of whatever we did for our project 2007 to project 2010 upgrade. Luckily for them, they use TFS, and they have all of the test cases ready with them. We do some more stuff here. We basically test integration with TFS. We basically test the reporting. We also do create deployment scripts for our by our engineer and support team. They basically write the script that deploys projects client 2013 to clients. We develop load and stress tests. We develop training materials, and we basically plan what's a good time for an outage. Iteration 4, it's basically what happens in January for us. Again, it's basically going to be the same thing, except that we will no longer run the full battery of stress tests. We basically will do some load testing when we go live on our first initial day of going live, and we basically will do validate that all the services are working, all of the services is working, and we will start indexing of all of the content. So this is final steps of our technical information. This is what we really look like. We have two data centers.
Yeah, so like we said, we have a private cloud. We have two data centers. The production data center is in North Carolina, in Oxford, North Carolina. And the QA and the dev data centers are in Edison, New Jersey, though. So we run everything off of VMware. So pretty much, I would say, except for our AX SQL servers, everything else, I would say 99.9% of all our servers are virtualized. The backend is, we are using NetApp SAN for backend. And there's constant replication of data happening between the production to the Edison data centers, though, for backup purposes. Mm-hmm. So this was our, on the left-hand side, you see our SharePoint 2010 farm. We have two front ends. We have an application server. We have SSRS server and two cert servers. On the back-end side, we also have an analysis server and a database server. And since we are completely virtualized, it was very easy for our infrastructure guys to come up with a new set of servers. So typically, we don't do in-place upgrades. Though we've created a whole new set of servers. We would do a backup of the database from the old databases and move them to the 2010 ones and run some upgrade scripts. And the whole farm would come would be upgraded to 2013. We would have DNSs set up for the 2010 farm. Basically, those DNSs we would end up either we might not go with a Big Bang theory though. So we might have a new set of DNSs So the 2013 farm will have a whole new set of DNSs. So
well, with probably with the exception of my project, we basically since it's very easy to, again, project this kind of vanilla, we basically migrate it as a set. We basically take it from one place, put it in a new place. We're done. We don't have to touch it. The only difference really between these two farms is that all of a sudden the analysis services server joins the SharePoint farm, so we have to buy an additional license of SharePoint.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it.
So as long as we can upgrade the entire web application, I'm saying we can keep the same DNS though. So the issue comes in when we are when you're not upgrading the entire web application in one shot.
Mm-hmm. Final thoughts? We think that both SharePoint and Project Server are core reasons for success, well, with some TFS. So without these tools in place, we would never be able to kind of mature as an IT organization, and we wouldn't be able to offer that much service to our business users who have been struggling on, you know, email file servers, that type of stuff. And you know, that's why we think that we're still, you know, employed at Trevo. These two servers are kind of very much related, but so far we've been managing it a little bit differently. As I mentioned, we basically used Project Server until this year, more or less a vanilla mode with very basic customizations, and we've had, you know, fairly good traction with our business customers and IT users. By keeping things very simple, it allowed us to move fast with Project Server, specific to doing upgrades and basically doing any type of fixes. We understand that Project kind of has a little bit more a different relationship from SharePoint when it comes to deployment of hot fixes and, you know, service packs. When you basically do it, you kind of have to do it a little bit more carefully. You have to also make sure that you deploy the client as well as the server. That allowed us to kind of do it very easily by keeping things simple. And in 2013, we're just planning to expand usage of our Project Server at Trevlon. We want to start integration with the AX Project module. We want to push our business teams to use the Project Server SharePoint sites a little bit more in terms of using it for document management and application lifecycle, and then utilize Project sites for a totally new different area of Revlon, basically inside product lifecycle management. That's one of the things that we have a lot of old code. I think it's VB5 and VB6 code where these applications just need to be replaced.
That's it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think bottom line is, as long as you don't have custom code in your farm, like in either in SharePoint or Project, upgrade is very, very simple, though. I mean, I wouldn't be too concerned with upgrades if you have no custom code, though.
Mm-hmm.
If you have third-party products like Nintex or Chorusworks, I mean, your upgrade is still going to be simple because you can just get an upgraded version of that package, install it in your new 2013 farm, and your upgrade would still be simple, though. The issue arises only if you have internal developers who've started writing custom web parts or have started writing custom code. I mean, that piece of code basically needs to be reevaluated, has to be recompiled and redeployed though, for it to work properly.
Mm-hmm. Well, so as long as our business users will accept the UAT and all of the scalability that we have missed in the past, we're probably going to go live with Project 2013, you know, sometime mid-January. Should be a good time for us. At that point in time, we're probably going to start looking at portfolio management and working with Nintex, and Nintex is a little bit slower. They will have their product release, and they mentioned to us the project workflow will be available in the first quarter, and we'll definitely jump on that. We think it's a very high value add for us and for our business even more.
That's all right.
Yeah. Well, and we have some standard business challenges. Our employees want to work together from virtual anywhere, and we're going to meet them with standard mobility access that we leverage. We briefly looked at Project Server Online, and unfortunately, we have way too many customizations that we didn't really fit into that paradigm. We want to manage flexibility, and I think because we're under Microsoft EA, and I'm not sure if anybody else here is in the same solution, we kind of know our costs. We kind of know that EA agreements are supposed to go up slightly this year, but I hope that it's not going to be a massive amount. It should be manageable. We think that our investment in Project Server and SharePoint, specific with SharePoint customizations and reporting, allows us to compete very, very well in the marketplace. And last but not least, the ability to report or where our projects are gives our executives and managers, you know, a lot of visibility into what's happening at Trevlon. Some of the features of projects: get started quickly, use flexible PPM, collaborate with using SharePoint, and just be quick. Any questions? I think this is pretty much the end of our presentation. Go ahead. No, the way that our custom OLAP database works is we have an SSAS package that basically retrieves data from the reporting database. And there's literally only additive enhancements to the reporting database. We have, throughout the last two upgrades of project reporting database, zero issues. We couldn't be more happy with the reporting database. It was a very flexible interface for us to use. Mm-hmm. Yes, there is a kind of a new and improved way of basically doing both statusing and timesheets. And what's going to end up happening is I think the relationship between timesheets and statusing is going to be a little bit tighter. And we're going to end up moving from status timesheets to standard timesheet mode. So instead of basically seeing 2,000 lines of tasks that somebody has to check their time against, we're literally going to see, you know, 20 or 30. We have a lot of complaints from at least our users, our team members, that basically they hate doing time. And my boss says, I don't care if you hate doing time. It's basically, it goes on a capital sheet for our company, and you guys have to do it. Our bonuses depend on it. So so deal with the pain, but we're trying to solve everybody's pain at the same time. The question is, why didn't we go with Project Online? We're planning on doing a little bit more customization with our SharePoint sites, and that's basically the main reason why we decided not to go with Project Online. Two other specific reasons that why kind of we decided not to is we really want to take a look at the integration between Dynamics AX and Project Server. We've started our project of consolidating, you know, 20 different ERP applications and going with Dynamics AX. If basically we can make this work, we will eliminate a lot of custom handwritten applications that are scaring bejesus out of us. So that's another reason. Uh-huh.
How long did you stay on 2010? See, one of the things that, like I was saying, is that like even when we went on to 2010, right? There was an issue with the new UI that 2010 has. For that UI to work properly, you need Internet Explorer 7 and higher, though. And we were on Windows XP till earlier this year. A lot of the regions at Revlon, since it's a global company, we had some of the regions in Revlon who were still on Windows XP and IE6. So at that point in time, IE6 was still our standard, though. So what we had done is that even though we had upgraded our backend to SharePoint 2010, we did not upgrade the UI to the V4 UI for all the regions, though. So we basically pick and chose. So we pretty much piggybacked on the infrastructure team who was upgrading the OSs and the IEs on the end user machines, though. So after they were done with their upgrades, we would basically turn on the UI. And basically, we had to go through a training session for that also, though. So that the, because there was a big change in the UI from 2007 to 2010, though. The change is not that bad from 2010 to 2013, from 2010 to 2013, though, but from 7 to 10 was a big change.
I think the initial SharePoint, like we kind of mentioned in the kind of at the beginning or middle of our presentation, we always have to just deal with UI change. The way that we deal with it is that we train the users, we kind of make them make sure that they know that this UI change is going to happen. And even with minimal training, especially dealing with a couple of people that are kind of IT friendly, as long as we basically train them, they tend to spread the word and show people how to get around. And that seems to be the best way that we've been doing this. It worked for us going from 2007 to 2010, when we basically did the visual upgrade switch on a lot of the sites. And we think that we're going to do the same thing with this upgrade.
So one of the only things that we know from a visual, apart from the end user training, one of the things that definitely breaks, we know for a fact, is basically if you have any applications that use jQuery, though. So that stuff changes because jQuery, is, like, since it's using client-side stuff and you're actually accessing fields, since the HTML changes on the page, jQuery stuff changes. So from a development standpoint, we actually had to refactor that stuff also, though. So the developers had to actually fix that, test that, and then basically upgrade those sites which were using jQuery.
Thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you.